There's a medrash. Medrash talks about comparing the damage that the Umos Elam did to Klal Yisrael. The medrash talks about, there was a moshe once, there was a bird which had its nest by the seashore, and it laid its eggs in the nest, and the water comes and washes away the eggs from the nest, and the bird decides that it's going to take nekama, and it's going to pay back to the ocean, to the what it did to its nest. So it's going to empty out the ocean. So the bird goes to the water, takes water in its beak, goes to the yabasha and pours it up into the yabasha. And obviously, as long as it's going to do that, it's not going to make any difference at all in the water which is in the yam. So the medrash says, "Kach lumas arlam, whatever they do to Klal Yisrael is like this same impact of the Klal Yisrael is the impact of this bird on the water." That's the mashal the medrash uses. So Rashiva Rukhaim Zichl Vracha. Once I heard from him in a few different venues. I heard from him in a small chabur. We were sitting with him around this time of year. And also, I think he said it once by one of the Guru conventions. I think I heard it afterwards. He mentioned that he'd said it there. How do you understand that medrash? What do the words mean? 6 million people is a teep in a yam. What do the words mean? You know, it's a tipa from a yam. The bird can take out of the yam a mashahu. You know, how much can it take out? But this is 6 million people, and that's just and exeris tachmatatz and then the pogroms and the korban abayis. According to the cheshbonos of the Gemara over there in Gittin, you're talking about millions of people were killed during the korban abayis. What does it mean? It's just a mashahu. It's just a tipa in a yam. And he gave an answer. The point I want to give up on the answer is, but you have to live the thought process to come up with this answer. And that was the point which was so important to us, was that we were looking at a person, we were dealing with a person who had a thought process like that. And he said, from the perspective of Netzach, it's a tipa min hayam. We live in this very time-bound, limited world. A very limited world. It's tremendous impact. If you look at it from the Pilas my separation is till Seif the Bria, and you live in the world of Netzach. We, from that perspective, it was a mashu. That's what the Medrash is saying. We were able to see that whole. When he said it, I said, why didn't I think of that answer? And the answer is, I don't live in the world of Netzach. I don't live with the perspective of Netzach, but a person who lives with the perspective of Netzach, the answer is obvious. I had the same hargosha. Chazal Rashi brings from Chazal that because Kodesh Baruch Hu says v'niktash b'mechudoy b'chvaydi b'mechubad. Rashi will be v'niktash b'mechubadoy. Because Kodesh Baruch Hu says din sedikov his shmoy v'nistalav and his kalis. So the greatest Kiddush Hashem, which we would be familiar with in our recent history, should be the Holocaust. Kadosh Baruch Hu was Oisadin in Tzaddikim, is Shmoyim Nisalim in his Kalish. So the Baruch Hu Oisadin with one Tzaddik, he's the Shmoyim Nisalim in his Kalish. Kal v'charmer, he's Oisadin with Tzaddikim and Tzaddikim and Tzaddikim, the thousands of Tzaddikim. But most people look out, either they have their emunah challenged, or their moon is not challenged, but their moon got stronger because of the Holocaust. Rashi Rukhaim used to say over constantly, he says, we saw what Midas Adin was. So we have a better akara of a Kadosh Baruch Hu now. We saw that even the tzaddikim, and he would say, it's Shmoy ben Yisrael ben Yiskadosh. The person's name was Yiskadosh. Through the Holocaust, the person's name was Yiskadosh. Shmoy was his element. It was a different world. Looking at a person who was able to go through and lose mishpacha, brothers, sisters-in-law, nieces, nephews, uncles, parents. Most of his friends, like I mentioned yesterday. So, see, he was one of the people who left yeshiva and was able to survive. There's 450 people names that are in the list. They have the list of the names who were killed on Chof Tammuz, and he was one of the ones who survived. All his chaverim from yeshiva were killed. Shmoy Nisalban, it was a different it was a different perspective. It was a perspective of Kodesh Baruch Hu was real, totally real. There's a name, I want to mention a name over here, which I assume everybody's familiar with the name. I don't know. Ramoto Pogromansky. The Olam is familiar with his name, right? Ramoto Pogromansky. Who's not familiar with Ramoto Pogromansky? Good. Ramoto Pogromansky was, just to give a background, Ramoto Pogromansky was, for those, we'll call him about Shuva in a certain sense. He was a young man. It was Nifta. His father was Nifta very young. He was a very brilliant person. And at a very young age, he took over his father's business. At the age of 11, he was running his father's full factory in charge of, and turning a profit. Rebbe Yelapian came to his little shtetl where he was living and, you know, saw this young man, saw what he is. He says, Chelech L'Raisa, convinced him to go away to yeshiva, to go to learn and tell yeshiva. I mean, this is talking about in the 20s, 1920s. So he went there for a short tkufa, he went back home. Rebbe Yelapian got wind of it that he had went back home, and he went after him again. And he sent him away to yeshiva, and he ended up staying. He lived in a short tkufa, he spent some time in Tel Yeshiva, eventually ended up settling in Kovno. The Shira Gifter would say over, he would, you know, come visit the yeshiva. If they send the picture, Tel Yeshiva in Europe, the Beis Medrash had four levels of shiurim. There was, you know, each year was a few tkufa of a few years. There was, I mean, when I was in yeshiva in Cleveland, the shalif was almost was a year and a quarter. Shir Beis was 2 years, etc. Shir Hay, however, was a special shir. You went to by invitation only. So this young man came into yeshiva at the age of 13. I think he was 12. Then when he came back to yeshiva, within a year he was going to Shir Hay. Shir Hay was said by the Talzin Rav. It was a shir used to say Thursday nights by invitation only. It went from 12 till 7 in the morning. You say a shir for 7 hours straight. And Ramoto Pogromansky, he was in that shir within a year and a half after he was in yeshiva as a bachur of 13 years old. He was sitting in that shir. I mean, talk about, that's the level of guidance of Ramoto Pogromansky. Ramoto was in the Kovno Ghetto during the war, and he spent the last scoop of his life, he spent grappling philosophically with what was the correct perspective to understand the Holocaust. But one time he said a nusach, when he was in the Kovno Ghetto, he said a nusach, he says, I don't see Nazis Yimach Shemom. I see psukim from Tanakh. That was his nusach. I see psukim of Tanakh. Shalos, which pasuk of Tanakh was the right pasuk? After the war, he was in Paris. I heard this from Reb Aaron Kreiser Zatzal, from, you know, Reb Aaron Kreiser, right? So Reb Aaron Kreiser was with him. With him, there's a kibbur of Mir Bachram ended up in Paris after the war. He was with him together in Paris, and he says, you know, he would sit there for hours just thinking, and he would say, "Chava naya perspektiv." You know, every day he had like a new way to look at it. His mind was grappling with understand. He saw psukim of Tanakh. He didn't see Nazis. He saw psukim of Tanakh. But how do you do it? So I want to tell you, I was sharing myself with Ramoto Pogromansky, which is not so before sin. So one time the Bochum was sitting and talking about the Bochum was sitting and Ramoto was there sitting and they were schmoozing and they were talking about the halacha that the person's more broad, this person finds climb a big day, he's mechiv de poishtoy a filo b'shuk. So one of the Bochum there was, I don't really remember the details, how it is nisgalgal to this conversation. The conversation went, the means of the halacha, it means, climb the rise, ain eight of eight tuna, you drop your pants. If the pants are climbed, you drop your pants, you walk around the street, and you're gotkas, okay? That's halacha. Sir Motel said, he says, it was in Paris, he says, you know, this is said in Yiddish, but he'd be standing on the top of the Eiffel Tower, the whole city could see him, and he realizes that his pants have climb in them. He dropped his pants. So when the Bachman says, Ramotel, Eiffel Tower, what's that? What are you talking about? So Ramotel stopped and he thought, and he said, yeah, I do. If Kadosh Baruch Hu is real enough that death, you can stand in front of the whole city and say, Rabbi, I couldn't care less, but ain't Eitzav, ain't Tudel, v'neged Hashem, then you can see Psukim of Tanakh. How do we make Kadosh Baruch Hu, you want to make Kadosh Baruch Hu real? You want to make Kadosh Baruch Hu real to us? It's through Tefillah. Tefillah is when we talk, the only way human being is impacts on the neshama is through ma'aseh mitzvahs. And the harder the ma'aseh mitzvah is, the more difficult the ma'aseh mitzvah is, the more I'm saying, you know what? The Kodesh Baruch Hu is real. Horaya, I'm willing to do something which I don't want to do because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is there. And every time I do it, I'm mechazik myself, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is there, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is real. Because it's something which I don't want to do, or it's hard for me to do, and I'm doing it anyway. And each time you impress it to the neshama again and again and again, the musaq that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is real, then I can live with the Muna. But Christ, we're not a religion of just makshav, but dafka. It's dafka through ma'isa mitzvahs. Gadol tamar shemeiv le'dei ma'isa. So Ramota Pogromansky, which Rigifter told us, he says in regards to, he could take, Ramota had a Havana in the deepest musagim of Kabbalah, and he could say a shir and make it so clear that even the littlest bacher, youngest bacher, could understand what he was talking about. The reason why he's not so well known is because he couldn't write. He had a dyslexia, he couldn't write. He says, you know, the Nusach said in Yiddish that, you know, the Noach was even dry of Mirgazokt. You know, you write the name Noach with seven mistakes. That was talking about me. He's like, he says, what shot? He was so brilliant. You know, he said, I talk an idol and das, the Russian kept the das. There's a special das called me, how to write. I can't write. Nothing was left written from him personally. He had no notes. He couldn't write. So he had nothing left from him. So the Talmidim, the people know him, they say over, the, you know, little things here and there, they have written down from him. But his kayach of machshava was tremendous, but that came together with, only came together because he had the ability to see such a, because he could live a halacha of Ein Eitzim and Tzulul and Eged Hashem in the middle of Eiffel Tower. I heard this from somebody who actually replaced a crisis by Yossi Yeshiva, that's Rebaron's son, but I didn't hear it. I heard it from somebody else who heard it from the Bacher who asked him the question. You know, then obviously heard it says, Ramadul, Eiffel Tower, like, what are you saying, you know? And he stopped and he thought, he said, yeah. There's people like that. So Rishi Reb Chaim, one time, you would hear different things. Although he didn't talk too much about us. He was in Siberia for a good part of the war. And he would say different comments here and there. One time he had a comment. He said, you know, the Rishi Reb Chaim, whoever you ever met him, you ever shook his hand would swallow your hand. He had gigantic hands. Sometimes he said, why do you have gigantic hands? He says, what was his job in Siberia? Shabbos Sabir was after they would cut down the trees, they would have to pull the roots out from the ground. They didn't give him any machine to do that. He had to do it by hand. They'd pull the roots out from the ground by hand. That was his job. So his hands became very large from the work. He one time made a comment, he says, you know, why did I do that job? Because it wasn't Chil Shabbos D'Oraisa. We had to work on Shabbos. So the person who was cutting the tree was Chil Shabbos D'Oraisa. The Shia is already dead, pulling out the roots of the Rabbanan. See, rather do the harder job. I mean, I don't know what the words mean to pull out roots from a tree from the ground, from the frozen ground of the Siberia. I don't know what the words mean to pull it out by hand. I don't know what the words mean. But he said he had the choice to do the other job. But he didn't want to do the other job, because that's Chil Shabbos D'Oraisa. And this is only Chil Shabbos D'Rabbanan. That was pretty cool with Nefesh. I mean, like, you. And apparently, somebody told me, I never heard this mice during the shiva. Somebody said that one time he said to them that he had one opportunity to cook in the kitchen. That's Kibbutz Shabbos, the rice and mamish. So he could stay inside the warm building in the kitchen, would get extra food, or go outside into the freezing winter, the Siberian winter. I mean, what are the words in the Siberian winter? What are the words mean? You know, 40 below, to pull out roots by hand. But I'd rather do that, because that's Chil Shabbos D'Rabban, and this is Chil Shabbos D'Oraisa. So you want to know a person who's able to go through the war and say, you know, my emunah was nischazik, is because mitzvahs were real. It was a mesiras nefesh for a mitzvah. It wasn't, I mean, it was known that all the in yeshiva was known by us that, you know, that Rishiva's favorite b'shafta was Zvachim. So one time, you know, we were having a conversation, we were just talking to me, it was maybe myself and a very few other individuals. He says, you know, that he says when he ended up, he's able to, when he went to Siberia, he's able to take a Gemara with him. He took a Gemara Zvachim with him. So he had a Gemara with him. So Zvachim fetched him all in Siberia. I chazed over Zvachim 14 times in Siberia. When? They woke him up as soon as light to take him out to work. He worked 14, 16 hours outside pulling up roots by hand. They come back at night and chazed over Zvachim. Right. Yes, well, we would all do. We would all do that, right? We'd sit down and chazed over Zvachim. Like, yeah. And he told me, he says, he has notes that he wrote on Zvachim in Siberia. He has notes. Then Rabbi Sarotsky said over, he says he was in the house one time. He saw he said Shurim and Taharis. He had notes on his Shurim and Taharis. He said Shurim and Taharis from Baal Peh, and that was my service. Said Shurim and Taharis while he was there in Siberia also. Mesiras Nefesh, you know, what's the time to learn? You know, I mean, you got to learn. You're Yeshiva Bachar. So you sit in Siberia at 11 o'clock at night, after a backbreaking work of day, and you chaz it over Zvachim 14 times. I mean, how about my life if I chaz it over Zvachim 14 times? But it was real. Torah was real. Mitzvahs were real. If you want the Kadosh Baruch Hu to be real, the Rosh Hashanah gave us a vehicle. It gave us a vehicle how everything should be real. We were Zaycha, when Taka was real to us, then the Beis HaMikdash was the most real place that Kadosh Baruch Hu was in the world was the Beis HaMikdash. You walked in the Mikdash and you saw Kadosh Baruch Hu. There was a Re'iyah. You saw Kadosh Baruch Hu. We don't see Kadosh Baruch Hu. You walked in the Mikdash and you saw Kadosh Baruch Hu. If Kadosh Baruch Hu was real to us, we'd have Mikdash. The less real Kadosh Baruch Hu is, the less we're further away we move away from the exclusive of having the Mikdash. The end of that is, it was just, Yeshiva came to America, said, so rebuilt. He said, Baruch Hashem, he got married, had mishpacha, his son develops Yeramach, brain tumor. Question, should they serve, operate? They operated, successful, came back again, deteriorated. I never saw him depressed about it. I never saw him depressed. Chasdei Hashem Kilu Sam. That was his favorite. There was another fellow from Tells, Mati Katz. His name is not so well known as a singer. But he put out one tape. It was called a thing called Bakashas. On the tape, there's a song Chasdei Hashem Kilu Sam. And that was he composed that niggun. Not the words, obviously, but the niggun. He composed it because he went through a machlo himself. He said, well, and recovered from the mark, he composed this niggun. And Rashi Bakami used to love that, and that was his favorite niggun. His favorite niggun when his son recovered. And his son was again ill. And his son had a stroke. And his son was paralyzed. And his favorite niggun was Chasdei Hashem Kilu Sam. The niggun was Chasdei Hashem Kilu Sam. Okay, I mean, and then when his granddaughter had an aneurysm and died, you know, young girl, his favorite thing was Chasdei Hashem Kilu Sam. Kadosh Baruch Hu was real. It was close. One machshava at the end. So I came here to Silver Spring. This is for 14 years. So I came August 1997, right before Elul Zman. And then Sukkot time, I was back in Cleveland. So obviously went to visit, you know, by Rosh Shiva. So he asked me, how's it going? So, you know, so I kvetched him. That's part of being yeshiva. You kvetch. No, this is not good. That's not good. And it's part of being like, you know, you go to yeshiva bacher. Like, you know, I mean, I have to tell you, I think I was entitled. After being 23 years in Tel Yeshiva, you know, Silver Spring, Maryland is a little bit of a shock to the system. You know, and it didn't look like this room. I mean, like, you know. Yom Neroim, I remember I was sitting on the Mizrach Vant, Yom Neroim by us in the yeshiva, in the trailer that we daven, because we didn't have a place to daven, we didn't have a room to daven, because the base medrash was being used by as far as Sharminyan had a chazak on the base medrash. So we're davening in this trailer over there, and I'm picturing the Mizrach Vant that tells yeshiva, for Yom Neroim, I'm thinking, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? Like, and then the second thought was like, you got to be kidding. I'm picturing, you know, the Rashivas, and that's who belongs on a Mizrach Vant. What am I doing on a Mizrach Vant? And all of the issues, etc. So I go back and I start kvetching. I'm 2 minutes, two sentences into my kvetch, three sentences into my kvetch, and he says, he interrupts me. He says, 80%? Is it 80% good? I said, yes, it's 80% good. He says, you don't get better than 80% in life. Tell me a shikol peret. That was the end of the conversation. And that was it. For the next 12 years, I would go back to visit. There never was a room for a kvetch. And the Rishon Yid and Eitz is one thing. Kvetch? What kvetch? Is 80% good? Well, who gets better than 80% in life? And I lived on that sound for the last 14 years. It's, you know, it's always been at least 80%. 75, good, you know. But that's how he lived. He lived because the Kodesh Baruch Hu was real. Chas Hashem ki lo yisamnu. Chas Hashem lo yisamnu. Yeah. We used to have a joke in yeshiva that it tells yeshiva to get an aliyah, either somebody had to be born or somebody had to die. Between all of the Yungalite having kids and between all the Rebbeim who Nebuch went through the war and had yard sites for everybody. So every week they were getting aliyah because they had a yard site. But that's what it was. The older Rebbeim, they had brothers, they had sisters, they had parents, they had uncle. I mean, and there was nobody left for these mishpachas to do anything for them. They were the only survivors of their mishpachas, many of them. You know, and it would hit me like, you know, Chas Hashem Kino Samdo. You know, I have to tell you, just the Patir was very hard for me, and the Levi was very hard for me, and even now it's still very hard for me. I remember the Patir was right before Rosh Chodesh, and Shabbos was Chodesh, and was saying Hallel, and I was crying. It was Shabbos, but I was crying. I got to Hodel Hashem Ki Tov Ki L'Olam Chastoy. And I stopped and said, you know what? What would the Rishiva be telling me to think? He says, you ingrate. Rosh says, look, you ingrate. I gave you your Rebbe way beyond. Rishiva Baruch Tzatzal was Nifter in 1979. Rishiva Malta was Nifter. Rishiva Malta was Nifter in the year 2000, I think. 2001. And I gave you Rebbe another 10 years. He lived. Chukidei is how old he was. I mean, I have my sheet of how old he was. I know, you know, they say they give a younger date than the. He told me a fair not like that one time. I mean, a few times. He told me he came to Tells. He was 15 years old when he came to Tells. He told me that he heard a full cycle of Shirin by Rebbe Tells for 5 years. And Rebbe Tells was after 1931. So how old was he? He came as old at least 1926. I mean, he was born at least in 1911. So he wasn't 98. I mean, according to the papers, he was 98. I can't do the math. He was born in 1911. He was lifter in 2011. He wasn't 98. I mean, he's either 99 or 100. And he said, he didn't think he didn't come earlier. He said he heard a full cycle of Shurim. I don't know when he started the cycle. He said at least 100. I gave you your Rebbe for 100 years. You know, instead of focusing on what you that you lost, that you didn't have, focus on how much I did give you. I gave you your Rebbe for so many years. Be thankful for that. Be grateful for that. So you want more? Yeah, you want more. But it was 80% good. I said, I heard his voice talking to me and telling me that. And that was like, allowed me to finish off Hallel. And say, with the Hargosha. Okay, we'll pick up tomorrow, Mr. Shem.